Beanie, what were you going to say? Last thoughts.
Well, I didn't know when we were going to end, but
I have a lot of last thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a lot of last thoughts. But if Joanne gets to tell a food story, I want to tell a food story.
Welcome to the Raw and Wild Hearts, a place where the raw, the unfiltered, the wild hearts gather to celebrate triumphs and hardships, learn from each other, grow together, and break down a culture rooted in fear. We will talk, we will laugh, and we will lean on each other about everyday life experiences that we could all use a little support through, and then we'll bask in the wild, magical beings that we are. My philosophy is that by embracing the dark, we may just let in the light. I am your host, Lori Rising, healer, educator, writer, adventurer, retreat leader, birth defender, and animal enthusiast and activist, along with my wild heart sidekick kitty, Jesus the Brave. We'd like to invite you to get excited about the Wild Heart Revolution. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's very special episode. It's one of only two in-person interviews I've done since last March. This one is with my dear friends who have an organic vegetable farm and pumpkin patch in my hometown of Algona, Iowa. I'm thrilled to highlight these two workers here on the Earth Plane. I mean, there were so many things we didn't even get to today, like the music Beanie has brought to this community, and just the fact that Joanne grows her hair to donate to the Locks of Love over and over. Yep, these two are truly aligned in a powerful mission of love. Their joy and vibration is absolutely tangible. I know you're going to feel it through this fun conversation. I feel truly blessed to share this exchange with them while I'm staying here in Iowa in order to convert my van for full-time living. Today, Beanie, Joanne, and I talk about their conscious choice to plant roots in this community where they could acquire land to specifically grow food and health. They have never stopped making that conscious choice and are enjoying the fruits of their labor now with booming business, building their new home, and learning valuable lessons along the way. We get into the communities in the world known as Blue Zones and the following Blue Zones project that Joanne led as the project coordinator. We take an unexpected and heartwarming turn down memory lane. We touch on Beanie's role in the minds of the youth and dive a little bit into the intersection of spirituality and religion in all of our lives. And then we talk about food again, because it may just be food that heals the world. You never know. I know that's where I've landed after this inspiring conversation with two beautiful lights that I am honored to have as friends. If you take anything from today, I do hope that you are inspired to support your local farms, learn about the food that grows in your area, go to the farmers markets, and begin to eat more seasonally, since diversity is beneficial in every single aspect of life, y'all. So I want to tell you a little bit about Patreon. Beanie, who is adorably old school, like, y'all, he printed something out, drove to my house, left it in my windshield while I was home, that kind of old school. He told me he didn't even know what a Patreon was, so let me share a little bit about it here. I've been building my online presence and support now for around the past year plus. A Patreon is like a membership to support your favorite educators and creators. Honestly, I see this as our new economy shift that Annie Botticelli was talking about in one of my previous episodes called The Heart of Manifesting with Annie Botticelli. Much more free education, while those that can spread the wealth intentionally support the ones that they resonate with, and those that cannot still receive the benefit and inspiration of the creator's work. And maybe someday, when they can afford to share the wealth, they will. As a member of different tiers, you will receive various benefits. For example, for my $5 membership tier, which is now less than a fancy coffee drink once a month, you get a shout out on my podcast and all the funny and interesting bonus audio from my conversations. Let me tell you, get in now, because Beanie, Joanne, and I have around 20 extra minutes that will be uploaded next weekend. I always upload it on the weekends that no episode drops to help tide you over. My tiers range from $3 to $25 a month, and you can cancel at any time. Every dollar goes directly toward me having the space to create more content to support your health, joy, vibration, and alignment here on Earth. I have meditations on my YouTube channel. I have a free living pain-free 5-week challenge that encompasses tons of the therapeutic healthcare I've been offering one-on-one for the past 20 years. I have 2 seasons of this podcast, and there is something to be learned or inspired by in every single episode, so do make sure to catch up on them. And I also offer free Kakao Zoom gatherings on every new and full moon for tuning into the power of nature and ourselves in supporting our soul's purpose and divinity. Make sure to join my email list to sign up. I really, truly want to thank you for whatever way you feel called to support. Small business survives on word of mouth and being shared within communities. I would also love your star rating and review if you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's as easy as sending a text message, y'all. I do want to thank you for keeping me going with all of your awesome feedback and love. And as always, all the links are below in the show notes, babes. And real quick, one other way to support the podcast, but more importantly, support your mental health and soul's journey is through BetterHelp. That's Better, H-E-L-P. They're a professional counseling platform online and done in the comfort of your own home. The telehealth appointments are private and more affordable than traditional counseling, and they do offer financial aid. For me, being on the go, telehealth has been tremendously supportive with the flexibility and with the huge transitions my life has been undergoing by following my new mindset and path. If you live in a small community like the one this episode is about, BetterHelp is perfect to access more diversity in therapists and have accessibility in general. They truly want you to find your best alignment. If your first therapist isn't a great fit, it's free and encouraged to switch at any time. And as a Wild Heart Warrior, you get 10% off your first month when you go to www.betterhelp.com/raw-and-wild-hearts. And as usual, the link is below in the show notes. Okay, on to the episode. Bodhi's Moonlight Gardens is owned and operated by Beanie Bodhi and Joanne Ropke Bodhi. Together, they grow 2 acres of diverse vegetables and a 14-acre pumpkin patch. Their produce is marketed locally at the Kossuth County Farmers Market and through an 85-member CSA. Beanie is also a teacher at Bishop Garrigan Schools. He is a science educator, teaching biology, advanced biology, ecology, and other classes. He often utilizes the farm as an outdoor classroom and hands-on learning environment for his students. On the farm, he is the lead builder, fixer of broken things, soils expert, fertilizer coordinator, wholesale pumpkin coordinator, and so much more. Joanne is also the public relations manager at the hospital in Algona-Kossuth Regional Health Center. In addition to promoting health and wellness opportunities, she was part of a team in Algona to bring the Blue Zones project to the community and served as the engagement coordinator for that project. On the farm, Joanne is the lead promoter, farmers market operator, recipe tester, CSA coordinator, and so much more. Please welcome Beanie Bodhi and Joanne Ropke Bodhi. Hello, Joanne and Beanie. Welcome to the Wild Heart Revolution.
Thank you, Lori, and welcome to our home here in our living room.
Welcome to the farm.
Yes, and it's a beautiful one at that. This is a very, very special episode, but if you've listened before, as you know, I like to start with a toast or a prayer. To the Wild Heart Warriors, in our light, especially our dark, and in all of our magic and glory, may we continue to elevate consciousness through honesty, humor, humility, gentle care, soul-wrenching growth, and ownership, and to us, and to being love, creating love, and sharing love. Ooh. Okay, now you talk.
All right. Hey, that was a good prayer because, as you know, I work at a Catholic school, and all week this week has been talking about tough love.
Really?
Yeah. Well, not tough, mean love, but like how sometimes love is hard, and then they pull out all these Bible scriptures about how there were times when sometimes you had to do the hard thing had to happen because it was the right thing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so awesome because that's exactly what I'm talking about and supporting people with in higher consciousness practice.
Well, you never thought that a Catholic priest was going to say the thing that you were looking for
exactly.
In higher consciousness, but that
Yay!
Was what the church service was about at school yesterday.
Beanie, I just came full circle right now, right here in your living room.
Total. So I guess it's a good thing I work at the Catholic school.
That's amazing, though. Oh, this is such a good theme because I actually was going to get super deep into that
about coming full circle with Catholicism and spirituality. Literally, if there's anything that we need to really take deeply into our souls about our ascension work as humans, is the work happens when we're uncomfortable. That's when we get the lessons. That's when we actually have the most growth in our process.
Yeah, I agree. No one ever.
And so does your priest.
Right. So does a priest with backup. But yeah, you know, it's a tough sermon to give to high school kids because they always want it really easy. But I mean, all the good things in life are really hard to come by.
Why is it, do you think? Why do you think kids want that?
I don't know. I was going to ask you.
It's not just kids that are wanting that comfort. Like, adults are constantly seeking comfort. Comfort food. We have heated seats in our car, so we're not uncomfortable for any longer than necessary when we're cold. I mean, it's all, the whole world is geared towards being comfortable. So is it any wonder that when it comes to becoming uncomfortable, we're reluctant?
Right. And it's like we expect immediate gratification. So we're like, no, we don't have to go through the work to get there because we've created a culture of convenience.
And I would say that some of the most memorable moments of my life were when I was most uncomfortable.
Well, I've been cooking this week, Lori, at the
Ooh.
House. And
are we having lunch today?
You definitely should stick around and eat with us. I don't know why you wouldn't, because I'm cooking. But like, it always tastes better when you work really hard to cook a meal. Everything that's hard is always better.
Yeah. Well, there's such an authenticity to it. I remember when I first went to Spain, it was the best education I could have gotten in life because I went into this completely different culture, didn't know the language, got to spend a couple of days with my friend's family there, and not understanding what they were saying with their words, I actually really picked up on their cues and what was happening energetically. And watching the process of cooking dinner to the very beautiful long process of enjoying the meal, that was the highlight and focus of the entire night. It wasn't like, oh, let's eat so we can go watch TV, right? It was like, we're eating for the night. We're spending this time together. And like, it was very intentional time. It was beautiful. And I learned that at 19 years old and didn't ever really see it in our culture, like in certain ways. But, it wasn't a daily thing. I think it was special occasions, right? When we have holidays or family get-togethers, it's not like, no, this is intentionally happening every single day because it's important.
And I think that's why food is such a great entry-level change-making time, because you can move from convenient food to slow food, as it's sometimes called, and that might be the first step in understanding how you can change your behaviors and other aspects of your life, you know, from something that's easy to something that's harder and really personally more challenging.
Yeah, but we can't get too preachy. I mean, we have a cupboard full of snacks right there. Sometimes you just need to get some food into your body so you can go about your day, and you got to go fast, but like, when you put effort into making something good, it's just worth it. It just makes it so much better.
All things in moderation.
Yeah.
And there's always a time for a little Debbie.
We got a kid that eats so many granola bars. We have to take a loan out for granola bars. And we have all these vegetables. And we can't get him to eat any. And I'm still working on it. But he's 16 years old and still prefers granola bars to vegetables, but
trying. I thought this was going to be your 10-year-old.
No.
Oh, no. No, he's got his own problems, but he's at least more likely to eat vegetables.
I'm going to back up just a second so people actually know who you are. Obviously, I've read your bios in the intro that you didn't know I was going to do, so hello. But I love that we're talking about food, because let's segue from that food topic. So this is a really special episode because I'm home right now for a very short time. And being home, I have some very dear friends that have rocked this community. And when I say this community, I mean a town of about 9,000.
Less.
6,000?
But, you know, the town is 6, but the whole county has got like 20,000, right?
I'd say closer to 17,000 in Kossuth County. But it does draw from quite a range. So, but yeah, about 6,000 in Algona.
This is crazy because I'm pretty sure when I graduated high school, there was over 8,000 here.
Yeah, there was. This town has shrunk since you've been in high school here. It's lost some numbers, but people now expand and drive throughout the county more. So it's more of like it's more like a county area, like Algona and the surrounding area, you would call it. But it has declined somewhat. But it's still so small that today, when I was at the barber shop, the person that called for an appointment, I saw while I was driving home. Like, it's that small. Like, people know each other.
Well, I just wanted to say that it's still a very active town. Like, even though there might be less people, I think that's something we're seeing across Iowa and across the Midwest. But there's still a lot of stuff happening in Algona and activities and engaged people. So the size is just one of many factors.
So I grew up with Beanie. He was a year younger than me in high school. And then I came home in my late 20s to, you know, try marriage out for a little bit. And Beanie and Joanne had already moved back home. Beanie met Joanne in college at Iowa State University, and they have a beautiful love story now and a gorgeous family with three children. And they came back and they put roots down, and I hightailed it out of here. So I'm just back visiting, and I feel like we are spiritually like soul sisters and brothers.
Yeah, we totally are.
Spiritual and family.
And I got to interrupt you and say how glad we are when people like you float back home and into our lives again, because it keeps us going. Because we didn't intend to always be here. It was a long journey before we decided to come back here, and it was just the right thing for us. But we tried, like, what was your phrase? What'd you say? You tried like hell, or you ran like hell to get out of here? Is that what you said?
I hightailed it
you
out of here.
You hightailed it. Well, not as rough as I made it sound. But we definitely hightailed it out of Iowa as well, and it took us about 10 years before we got back here. But, you know, we've loved it ever since, and I appreciate that. I'm sure you, being out in Portland and all the places you've been, Lori, like if you say you're from Iowa, it immediately comes with some sort of connotation. It's just nice to talk to you and be on this podcast and not be thrown under that bus.
You know what's funny is I know that like judgment that can be around the Midwest. And I have always been so unbelievably proud to say that I'm from Iowa. I love telling people, yeah, I'm a country girl and I'm a city girl. Like, I feel like I have the best of both worlds, because I got my childhood was kick ass. Like, it was amazing. Full circle back to right now, just being here, I get to be away from all people. Like, I am out under the stars every night. This is another reason why I came back here, is I'm communing more with nature, and I actually want to just hone into my energy, and it's a perfect place to do that.
I want to say something quick about our choice to come back, because it was super intentional.
Yeah,
we chose back, and Beanie kind of alluded to the fact that we weren't sure how long we were going to stay. But I would say that we've intentionally chosen to stay the time that we've been here. And then that's important, because I think you feel differently about that if you end up somewhere, which just can be fun too. But we didn't just end up here. We chose to be here. And I think that's reflected in how we go about our work and our fun and our lives. Because when you're choosing that, it's just a different feeling, right?
Absolutely. That was what I was going to bring up, is that you made this conscious choice to bring a high frequency to this area and to bring a vibration to the community that, I want to say this really beautifully, if we don't go out and experience the world, we are sometimes limited to our experiences, right? And so when people that go out, and I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, when you go out and experience the world and you bring back that kind of vibration to a community, because we don't know what we don't know, right?
Exactly.
And what we don't know, we fear.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that to become more loving, open, well-rounded people and accepting people, we need to somehow get in touch with those experiences. And if we cannot do it for ourselves, then we might be able to do it through other people in the community. And that is so beautiful. And that's exactly why we're here today doing this podcast. And it's called Acupuncture Points of America. Because without those acupuncture points, how do we evolve? I feel like this is so huge. And so I'm trying to like bring people into what we're really talking about here, is you grow food for this community. Like, I cannot overstate how amazing it is to bring food and health and life to a community. And I've watched you from the ground up when you started your farm, and you have grown and grown and grown over the years. And it just gives me goosebumps. It makes me so excited. I think what we're realizing is so important is to get back to local community, to get back to knowing where our food comes from, knowing how it's cultivated, knowing what's going into it. And that's exactly what you've been doing. So let's talk about the conscious choice to come back and plant roots in this community and how you evolved into basically seeding this community with amazing, organic, beautiful health.
Okay, well, there was so many. We really liked the Oregon coast, actually. But then we made the conscious choice that if we wanted to grow food for people, we had to do the hard thing and move back to Iowa because it was the only place that we could have access to land. Because it's a little bit of a privilege there, since I come from a farm family. You can't just get yourself some land to farm. But since my family was farming, it kind of became obvious that we got to go back to Iowa. And we considered whether to live in Joanne's hometown or my hometown, because both places offered the ability to get some land and start farming. And we settled on here just because of the connection to Algona, and Algona being a little bit of a bigger town, and then having more support from the family. But, you know, my family and everybody's family, your family, everyone's family in Iowa seemed like they knew how to grow their own food. And then we all just kind of forgot. And those people, like my mother and everyone's grandmother, that knowledge is still out there, how to raise their own food. But boy, there's some generations that it skipped there. And I feel like I'm one of those generations that it was starting to skip. And I just want to make sure that keeps getting passed on, how to grow your own food.
And I'd say once you get used to eating that food, it's really hard to go back. One thing that we did that was a really fun and meaningful experience was doing an apprenticeship on a farm in the Midwest, and doing it in the Midwest was really important because growing here is different from growing in California. It's different from growing in Pennsylvania. So we did that and really got an appreciation for the taste and the flavors and the relationships that it takes to build that kind of a garden. So when we came back here, we had a lot of ideas and we just kind of dug in and started. And that we made a lot of mistakes and had a lot of things happen, but we just kind of kept growing it.
Yeah, and I didn't love it at first, and it was hard, and our apprenticeship was hard. And, you know, we didn't make money for a year because we were just volunteering, learning how to do it, the way we wanted to do it. Because, I mean, we're living surrounded by monocultures of corn and soybeans. There's stuff growing everywhere, but it's not the stuff that you want to eat. And it's just, boy, one of the great ironies is that Iowa has so much production, but there's still no one out there growing stuff for their own table. I mean, it's just, it's going to go down as one of the great shockers of humanity of how we forgot to grow our own food, but are just so darn good at growing things for everyone else.
Yeah, people are always like, well, don't they have lots of corn there? I'm like, but we don't eat that corn. Like, that's it's corn for the insane amounts of livestock that we're having to keep going and producing for our culture of convenience. I didn't realize that you did an apprenticeship before you came here. And I love the lesson that you just said. This is a big lesson in everything right now, especially as people are really dropping into their divinity because we have such beautiful energies available. Just start. Honestly, like, we have to get out of the mentality of immediate gratification. Hey, bringing it back again. This is nice. We're doing a beautiful weave here. I can't wait to see the tapestry when we're finished. But if you just start your practice, you start your passion, and get out of this immediate gratification of like, oh, if I don't make the money immediately, it didn't work, or it's a failure. Like, failure literally is the best thing that can happen to us. I'm changing this mindset for myself and trying to see failure as a stepping stone and never as the true definition of failure.
Yeah, the first year that we were growing stuff, I think we had gone away for a week on a trip and we came back and we couldn't even find our vine crops anymore. Our melons, zucchinis, they were just gone in the weeds. And we were out there on our hands and knees pulling the weeds, trying to find them again. And looking back, that seems so silly now because we're so much better at how we do things. But yeah, like, that failure was important because now we appreciate the way we do things better now. And if you just waltz right into it and it's perfect right off the bat, it's another one of those gratification deals. Like, we just took some pictures out by our crappy tractor. I like our crappy tractor. Like, I I know there's better stuff out there. I don't want it. You know, it's sometimes it's good for it to be hard. And the people the people that buy the vegetables from us, I think they appreciate it sometimes that they know that we're out there pulling the weeds and picking the vegetables. And sometimes things need to come with a little bit of a struggle.
I can't emphasize enough how much even the selling was a struggle at first, because though after we finished this apprenticeship, and I have to say where it was because it makes a big difference, we were located really close to Rochester, Minnesota, where there's Mayo Clinic, where we have a lot of diversity in what people are eating and what their customs are regarding food. So we brought a lot of those ideas here to Algona, where a lot of people weren't eating some of the foods that we had now decided were just common foods that everybody liked. So I remember bringing like patty pan summer squash to some of our first farmers markets and people being like, what's that? And so we kind of had a running joke that was like, it's squash. It goes great with pork. Because people just couldn't imagine a meal without meat in it. And that's, we'd been eating mostly vegetarian meals up to that point. And we've always been meat eaters, but we just hadn't been eating it. So we kind of joked a lot about things like that. How to present vegetables in a way that people in the middle of rural Iowa would try them and eat them. And that took a lot of energy. I remember doing a lot of taste tests, getting people to try pesto, sharing recipes, just trying to introduce those foods in an accessible way that people were welcoming to that and not like, I'm not going to try that. And it's really been fun. And that's part of what I've enjoyed most about this, because then you learn what people really like to eat and then they tell you things. And food is that common thing that's very personal. There's a lot of family stories connected to food, like things that grandma used to make, things that mom used to make, things that they want to try and share with their children. And I love that part of it.
Oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. Girl, I remember you sharing those recipes and I loved it at the farmer's market. And just the amount of energy and love you're putting in, you know, you're not just showing up and you're like, here's my food. You're like, how do we weave this into the community? How do we bring in new experience and get people excited about it? That's why I wanted to do this so much, because I've watched you do it. I've felt it. And I've never been so proud of you for staying. And I kind of feel like when I left, it was almost like I needed similar experience around me. And you stayed and you created this over years. Like, you had such tenacity with it and fortitude, and now your level of success, we're sitting in it. We're sitting in your home that you built.
Well, Lori, having known you from way back in the teenage years and knowing you then, you did need to get the hell out of Algona. Like, you needed more. You needed enlightenment. You needed to go. That was for sure. And I did too. And I would have never come back here. I couldn't be back here without Joanne. Like, it only works because she came with me. Because that thing that you went searching for and had to go elsewhere to get it, I did too. But once I found it, then I was able to bring it back here. Like, there are many times where I think there's no way I can be here another day. But then I've got Joanne to keep me here, and it works.
I'm actually kind of misty-eyed right now. That was beautiful. And thank you for seeing me. I appreciate it. I mean, seriously, Joanne, are you a little misty-eyed?
I think it makes me feel like he captured a lioness and he brought her back here. This is a nugget of special information. Tomorrow is our 21st wedding anniversary.
Oh my goddess. That is amazing.
Yeah, and I can't do any like marriage cliches or any bullshit like that, because it really has been awesome.
Like I said, the more acupuncture points we bring in, the more that can shift energy, like everything we emanate. Like, you literally just said that your divinity is sitting next to you. I'm still reeling from that. I think that that is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard someone say about their love.
Well, I'm just going to keep patting myself on my back because like one of the acupuncture points that you're pointing out is our vegetables, how we're, you know, it is definitely a point. It's not like we're reaching thousands here. We're reaching 100 people with our vegetables, but I think it's making a difference. But another thing is the people that we meet with our relationship. Like, we've both thought like, hey, maybe we should jump on board and be those like marriage prep counselors that some of our, we know people do. Like sometimes I feel like, well, I guess I know we have something really special because I see how it's going for other other people. And like, maybe sometimes I think our relationship is another acupuncture point, how we're, I don't know, maybe examples to other people. I hope to my students, at least, like they see, hey, Mr. Bodhi, him and his wife get along pretty well. Hopefully that helps. I don't know.
They also feel your love. Like I just said, everything that we emanate goes out into our collective. And so when people see you together and hear you together and just feel your presence together, I'm automatically happy when I'm around you. There's a reason for that. When you emanate love in a home, in your relationship with your family, with your children, with your friends, people magnetize to that. They want to be around it.
It's fun to be a part of, and it's beautiful to see in others.
Also, like, hello, congratulations. You're in a generation where 21 years is quite the feat.
Yeah. Our marriage is old enough to go out and have a beer.
Oh, man. But it goes so fast. I've never felt older than I do when I look at our anniversary and think, 20, wow. What
oh my
the
gosh.
Heck happened? It just honestly flew by. Like, I'm looking at you, Lori, and I still feel like we could be back in high school. Like, I still feel like a kid at heart. I just don't know how the years flew by so fast.
Honestly, I think that we are thriving. I think that we are evolving. And that is what brings us to more of our conversation. It's happening faster than ever. And honestly, just coming home and being in flow with you so easily and so quickly, those are the people that you know are your soul family. But I also want to talk about what else you do in the community. Beanie is a high school teacher. He is absolutely authentic and beautiful and one of the best examples for our children. And I know that they don't want to let you go because you are what elevates, like you set a bar so high in teaching and in communicating and relating with kids.
Well, that's really flattering, but like they do pay me to teach. And I appreciate that. But I also, you know, teaching, I've tried to not teach many times, but it's just something I can't quit doing. I love doing it so much. And when I try to figure out what do I love about teaching so much, I think it's kind of a bit selfish. Like I have a bit of an ego, and like being able to share all my thoughts with all these young people, it's somewhat fulfilling. And I know I have that captive audience because they have to go to high school. And, but then that's where I feel like it's my responsibility. Like, I don't want to waste their time. Like, this is their chance in high school. And I want to introduce them to things. I want to share a lot with them. So, but the fact of the matter is I just love doing it. Teaching is, every time I think I got to get out of there, it just pulls me right back because it's such an enjoyable thing to do. And it helps to be at a good school where for the most part, the students are fun to work with.
So you're saying that the teaching gig is a lot easier than a stand-up comedian gig?
Oh my gosh, I cannot imagine trying to be a stand-up comedian. All the abuse. I'd much rather take abuse from a high school kid.
And they give you the built-in audience.
That's right. The only bad thing about teaching is just right when, it's kind of like a podcast, right when something gets going really, really good and then a bell rings or, you know.
Or someone comes to your door.
Yeah. Joanne, you work in the healthcare system.
Yes. So my job in the community is I'm the public relations manager for our local hospital, Kossuth Regional Health Center. And it's kind of a fun fit. Like some people might say, oh, that's totally different from working at a vegetable farm. But I really feel like those worlds intertwine because a lot of the stuff we talk about in the healthcare world is how do you get healthier and how do you seek that wellness? And oftentimes it's getting exercise, eating your fruits and vegetables. Well, guess what? That's what working on a farm is. It's getting exercise while growing fruits and vegetables. And so I find that those worlds actually intertwine very nicely. And it brought a great opportunity a few years ago when Kossuth Regional Health Center said, hey, Joanne, we'd like you to be part of the Algona Blue Zones project. And I saw that was something on the list to talk about today. And that was a really cool project. And being able to get engaged in that through my work there, even though it applied to my whole life, was really cool. And I felt that was a very proactive and progressive thing for our hospital to be embracing and seeking out.
That's amazing. I had no idea that you guys did an initiative like that. How cool that I was like, half of the outline is all about blue zones, because you are literally creating a blue zone here. Everything that you're doing is for the health and wellness of your community. Through young minds that Beanie's affecting, through healthcare that you're affecting, through literally putting nutrients and vitamins into people's bodies to the three children that you're raising that are absolutely amazing in a conscious way, which in small towns, it can be hard when you don't have diversity and a plethora of activities and museums and art and things to really create experiences for your children with. And so you have to get creative in that way as well. So I want to talk about Blue Zones and what Blue Zones are for anybody who hasn't heard of them. It's a non-scientific term given to geographic regions that are home to some of the world's oldest people. So there's reasons that they experience that longevity. And some of the things that I quick jotted down about what you do here with your lives is you're in dynamic motion because you're not doing something repetitively every day. You have all of these different jobs. You're out on the farm. You're squatting down. You're moving around. So you're creating a dynamic balance in your life. And most of us live in a very linear way. And so we go forward or we go to the side, but we don't go in a circle. So I feel like what you're doing is you're creating this circle of life here by all that you're offering. And you're also connecting to nature. Like I said, I was driven to come home again just to be in nature, to like emanate the frequency of nature within my soul, because I believe that we are nature. Like I believe our cells get activated when we're in nature.
Well, and then our jobs kind of dictate our schedule, what we have to do. But like you said, with the sunrise this morning, so much of our life is dictated by the weather, being farmers and gardeners. And we see the sunset about every day in the summer. We get to see the sunset. And sometimes we take that for granted, but sometimes, boy, we really appreciate it. We really appreciate the one last night. It was pretty awesome.
I was out there.
It was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But, you nailed it, Lori. Like, our life is very unpredictable about how things go, and it's not always good. Like, there's a lot of storms, there's damage, we've lost greenhouse plastic in storms, we've had crops get demolished. Like, it has not always been rosy, but that struggle is sometimes what makes you appreciate it, or it's the challenge. Like, there's nothing worse than when you're bored. And just when you got here, you talked about how our dog is bored and that's why he's ripping up the couch. And you're exactly right. And I'm the same way as our dog. When I get bored, it's miserable. Like, I'm never bored around the farm, ever.
We just said this the other day. My grandpa always used to say that he was never hungry and he was never bored. And he was, he's dead now. His name was Albert Ropke, and he was in World War II and farmed most of his life. And there were hard times, you know, during those years, but he doesn't reflect on that. He likes to think of it as a very busy and well-fed time. And he was an optimist, and I appreciated that and still appreciate that about him. So we are also never hungry and never bored.
I love those gauges. But what you're doing, what you've done, and what you're teaching your children is to live in adaptability and fluidity. This is how humans were made to thrive. We have had such intense programming that has suppressed or repressed most of our innate wisdom and intuition and ability. And the more that we can, and this is what I think COVID did for us, is we had to drop into adaptability. We didn't really have a choice. That's the beauty of it, I think, because as we do that, we get closer to our divine self. That's one of the reasons why I think it's happening quicker and we're having such a bigger like spike of ascension and a kind of a spiritual awakening across the world right now, which is so beautiful. And how fitting that I'm here with you during that. But let's talk real quick about the lifestyle in Blue Zones. They eat a diet full of whole plant foods. Ding, ding, ding. You're doing that. They have a life purpose, older and younger people living together. So in many Blue Zones, grandparents often live with their families and they have a healthy social network.
A couple things that I'm remembering that they call this like list of or this grouping of behaviors, the Power Nine. Sometimes they're referred to as a Power Nine. And one of them is to have a spiritual community. Mm-hmm. And two, one of them also was to celebrate with wine at 5. And that doesn't mean just drinking. It means drinking with friends, because drinking alone is different from drinking with a group of friends that you know and trust, and creating that tribe and having the tribe that supports you. And there is what I really found interesting about the Blue Zones project was the research that shows, like, if you have a friend that has good habits, then you're more likely to have those good habits. But if you have a friend with bad habits, well, the same thing happens. So if you surround yourself, if you create that tribe of people who really bring out the best in you, well, that's really the only way for you to reach your best self, is to be with those people who really help you connect and bring out your best qualities. And I found those things very interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a big reason why we all gravitated toward each other when I lived here for those 5 years. We had this beautiful group of friends that we used to cook meals together. We had potlucks. We went and played music or listened to music. Like, I remember us very specifically making sure we got together to do those things. That created an experience here for me that was really beautiful. For the time that I was here, I don't know that I would have even lasted for those 5 years without that.
Yeah, and it's what's interesting about some groups is sometimes you pull one pin out and the whole group kind of dissolves or changes. But time can do that too, you know, and children and responsibilities or different connections coming together, coming apart. They all have an impact on those groups. And so, yes, I miss those days too. Those were good ones.
Well, and that's where the fluidity comes in. Mm-hmm. It's the people that vibrate at your frequency that you're always going to be drawn back to.
And I'm okay with people moving in and out of our timeline. And you're right. Like, when you have that person that you connect with, it doesn't matter how much time has passed in between. You can fall right back into it. And I always remain ever hopeful that more of those people will continue to float into the life in the future, which makes it okay to continue living here. But Lori, you're one of many people that have been in our life in Algona that we've loved and have moved on. And it's painful a lot of times, but there's just something about being like we are right now, face to face, seeing that someone in the local community. That's why we like the local community. We see people, even if it's someone that you don't particularly like, you see them and they're part of the fabric of the community. And so we always find new people to connect with, new people to bond with. And it's really fulfilling.
Well, and I think what's important to remember, what you just said, is even if the energy is off, we're learning from that. Every interaction that we have is a reflection for us to actually go inside and look deeper for ourselves. If we want to truly grow in this life and, you know, get closer to that divinity, it gives us an opportunity to do that in towns where we are engaging in the local community, especially the way that you are, which is beautiful.
When we first moved back here, we had this dream of kind of creating an intentional community and recruiting a bunch of our friends from the East Coast and all over the world to come and build a bike shop and, you know, and have our someone who we actually chose as our first child's godfather, who now lives out in the San Francisco area. We wanted him to come and start his own business and just create this whole farm community where everybody did their part. And we realized after, I'm still hoping that happens, but I'm starting to think it's not going to. Now we've been here like 17 years. But what we kind of realized is you can't force that, you know, that, like you said, it kind of comes down to you have to figure out what you can do. It's kind of a love the ones you're with situation. And sometimes if it's not the friends you would have recruited, you can still find that friendship and those connected relationships. You just have to keep looking, and we keep finding them here. And that's also a very beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stop me from recruiting. I'm constantly recruiting to try to get people to move here. And I don't know why they wouldn't want to move. I love it here. I don't know why they wouldn't, because I'm so selfish and I can't see that they have lives elsewhere. But I still try to recruit. And I even recently tried to get someone to move from the Twin Cities to Algona, telling them, hey, with COVID anyway, you're going to love Algona. And they said, no, they really just like the Twin Cities because they can do anything they want whenever they want, and they don't have to ever worry about running into anyone. And I thought, well, what the hell is good about that? That's just not my style, but it must be for them and good for them. But I know sometimes I don't like to go to the grocery store because I might run into someone I don't want to run into, but that's life. And that makes life interesting.
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, because that's actually a big reason I left. Like, there was a bit, as you know, and I'm sure a lot of my listeners know, that my daughter was stillborn, and I needed to leave the community for two reasons. I kept getting re-triggered in the same environment. I also, my health was tanking because of the process that happened, and I just could not find the healthcare that vibrates with me and my frequency here. And so I did not feel like I was going to thrive. I didn't feel like I was going to get better. And then it just became a very dark cycle. And so it was the hardest decision I ever made, was to actually remove myself from the environment. But it's also what was extremely necessary. And luckily, I'm very in tune with my intuition, but it took me years to make that decision. As you know, I mean, I was in love and I had a marriage and I had an acreage and a life here. And so, you know, I'm on the other side of that coin, but here I am back here. I still love this area and I know everything that you're saying about it. And I think that it's important that we do get fluid within ourselves so that we can follow kind of that guiding light. Your guiding light has kept you here. I know you've thought about leaving over the years, but I think that you make a conscious choice over and over and over to stay, to elevate this community, to create your own blue zone. It's just so exciting because you don't see this very often. Like, I love the farm to table thing. I mean, hello, give me a winery that has a farm to table dinner and girl, I am there.
And we've talked about doing some more events like that. So as Lori was mentioning that we were sitting in the fruits of the labor, we're sitting in a building that Beanie built with some help. And now we finally have the space that we could do like a farm dinner out here sometime. And those are the kinds of connected events, you know, that bring people to the farm, that bring people together to enjoy all of our favorite things. And, you know, COVID is currently still occurring. But when the pandemic phases out and people get back to regular gathering and events, it'd be fun to do that stuff here.
But that's the thing. How do we elevate the consciousness of a planet if we only put the people that really have that love to share and want to create that space and that experience for people? You are creating a higher consciousness for the whole planet. And I deeply want to thank you for that.
I appreciate what you're doing because I know that you're going to move on from what you're doing with us here now, and you're going to continue to share your love with people all over the place. But I appreciate that we got to be a part of that.
Mm. Oh my God. See that? This is life. Like, this is why we chose to be in these bodies right now. You know, the more that we extend and connect and create together, we're creating always. What are you creating? Like, this is what I want everyone to think about right now. What are you creating? Are you creating from love? Are you creating from fear? Are you creating from hate? Are you creating from excitement? What are you creating from? And then move on from there.
Yeah, you know, I want to go back, Lori, a little bit, and you can edit this however way you want. But when you're bringing up Dania stillborn event, I got to say, I was terrified at that time because you said how you also needed to leave because there was too much community here, like you'd run to someone everywhere. When that happened, I feel like I was a really shitty friend because it was such a event, and I knew how I didn't know how traumatic it was. I tried to be empathetic, but I didn't understand. So I was terrified of running into you. Like, I remember that now, and I was like, oh boy, I don't know what to do. I can't call. If I go somewhere, what if I run into them? I remember. But that, you know, that was years ago, and I hope as I keep growing, like if that happened again to someone, I hope I would be able to do something, but I'm not quite so sure. I think I still might be terrified on how to deal with those life moments. But that's why people like you are doing the work you're doing, right?
Absolutely. I think that you would be there for somebody because once we go through an experience, we reflect on it. And that's when we learn. Like, even if we think, oh, we didn't do great in that experience, that's okay. That's who you were. You were working with what you had at the time. This is something that Brené Brown, I think, said. What if when you thought about that person or the event or the relationship, what if you knew they were doing the very best they could at that time? And it changed everything for me. And you're a different person now. And you have a friend like me to ask about it if you needed support, if you needed help. And I'll also tell you that you were actually picking up my energy. This is the truth. If I had opened my heart and asked energetically for people to come and comfort me, you would have felt that vibration. I was a raging ball of anger. I hated everyone. and I loved you, right? So we can be two things at once. And so you were probably picking up on that and you actually knew to stay away. So I just want to give you that.
Well, I'm really glad I did stay away, even though I felt kind of bad about it.
I feel like that was a learning experience too. I've never felt like I've been good in sad situations either. And I think what I learned from that is sometimes it's okay to just say that, like, hey, this is really dark and shitty.
Exactly.
And I think that's one thing that I really learned from just being on the peripheral of that experience.
That's all I wanted. Mm-hmm. The people that were trying so hard to make it better made it exponentially worse. And in a small town and local community, that's what was happening over and over. Because people say shitty one-liners that they've heard before and it's not authentic. And if you tell me, hey, this is dark and I don't know how to navigate it, perfect. That's your authentic truth. Oh, what a good thing to touch on right here. How bizarre and beautiful that we're sitting here on my podcast actually having like a heartfelt friendship moment.
Feels like we could have done this offline. But we'll take it. We'll take it. Now it's recorded forever for posterity.
Yeah, there's something about the warmth in your voice when you have headphones on that just bring up the truth within you. Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you. And Dunia thanks you. She's with me always. And her and I we're solid. Like, we know all now that has transpired in our relationship. And I feel proud. And I never thought I would get here. Never. Never, never, never. Especially without a living child. Well, that's going to take me into, I actually wanted to touch on religion and spirituality. Because I think it's important because, you know, Beanie and I grew up Catholic. Joanne, are you Catholic?
No, I grew up Lutheran.
So do you guys practice Lutheran or Catholic?
We are a little of both.
All right. Yes. See? Fluidity, adaptability. That's amazing. But Beanie and I went to Catholic school together. I definitely ran away from the religion and the language and really the fear that I felt when I was in that space. I'm actually kind of coming back in recently. Not that I'm organized religion type person at this point in my life, but I'm starting to put my defenses down because as we talk about ascension work, and we're also talking about it more like Christ consciousness, as you know, star seeds and light workers started bringing in Christ consciousness, I was like, huh. And then I was like, oh damn, yeah, that is Jesus Christ. He was living in the higher dimensional plane and realm. And everyone else was in their fear in 3D, right? So I'm seeing the story in a different way now. But I wanted to talk to you because you have continued practicing in organized religion. Was that a conscious choice to stay in a religion that maybe had language that was fearful?
Well, you know, whenever you say that you were raised Catholic, or especially if you say you went to Catholic school, I mean, there's so many people in our country that have that backstory. And it always comes loaded because there is that like legitimate stereotype of nuns, which you and I were both taught by nuns, Lori. And there's that stereotype of uniforms. We both wore uniforms when we were growing up. And so some of those stereotypes are true, but some of them aren't. And boy, this is a tough question, Lori. Like, you're right. When I look at my life, I really have stayed connected to the Catholic Church. I'm working for a Catholic school right now, but through all that journey and development, boy, my beliefs have really gone on roller coasters. I've learned so much about other religions. Even at our Catholic school, we have a world religions class. We teach so much about other faiths and knowing you, and it would just be I don't know if I could. I am a practicing Catholic, but I don't know if I just belittle myself and say I'm a hypocritical Catholic or say that I'm a exploring Catholic. And I think there's tons of Catholics out there that are in my ballpark where they're still practicing Catholics, but still learning so much in that spiritual journey. You know, that's what I struggle with, of how it all fits together. And like you, like, I'm sometimes I see how well this really connects, and other times I don't see it connecting. Like the scriptures that you read, and like you said, where you realize you spent so much time just listening to the Jesus stories at Catholic school and learning about Jesus, but not really looking at the real spiritual truth behind what Jesus was doing. And then you even though you've heard those scriptures a million times, suddenly you see them in a different light, but not because what they told you at church or Catholic school, but because what you learned elsewhere. And so it makes a different, it makes sense on a different plane.
Yeah, that was deep.
Well, I would say to add to this story, I was raised Lutheran, but was dangerously close to just walking away from faith completely in college, just because I didn't find it relevant or as meaningful to me as I did in my youth, until I found the Lutheran Volunteer Corps, which was basically like a Peace Corps type program where you volunteered, did a year of service in the United States, and then all of your stuff was covered. Like, you were in a house with other volunteers, you'd get a monthly stipend of $85 a month, and you got a food stipend of $80 a month. And so I applied and joined. And so I did a year of service in the North Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities. And the first week I was there, somebody was killed and their body was stored across the street from our house. And that was an eye-opening experience. You were placed in inner cities around the United States doing work in the community that you lived in. And what I really liked about this was it really opened me up to a new group of faithful believers that weren't just saying, we love God because God loves us. It was, we love God and the people of God, and we're going to show that by working for justice and through love and by living as simply as possible and being in community with others. And that is what brought me back into the church in a major way. And I feel like that's still the kinds of believers that I prefer to associate with most. Those who like being in community, those who are doing it in a simple way, and they care about others enough to seek out that justice for others. But the lesson that I felt like was most important for me was they often would bring up this verse, or it wasn't a Bible verse, it was just a quote from somebody saying that our justice is bound together. You know, you have to walk with me to understand my plight, basically. And so coming upon a problem or a group of people and saying, all right, everybody, here's what you all need to do, is not a great way to solve a problem. But you have to fully understand that person and kind of walk in their shoes and understand what they want. And then if you truly care about them, you will try to help them achieve their goals, not your goals. And I think that was kind of, because you kind of get caught sometimes in a faith community about everyone telling everyone else how they should live their lives and what faithful lives look like and what God looks like, or if it's God is a man or a woman, and that stuff really, it's not, if we focus on those things, there's a lot of disagreements. But if we focus on how we love and care for other people, and are we treating everybody like we want to be treated, the really basic things of life, like, those are the things that I care most about.
Yeah, I mean, you were detaching from ego.
Yeah.
I feel like that is the practice that we all need to keep dropping into. Like, our egos have run wild, you know, just with our entitlement or immediate gratification or culture of convenience, like all of these things. But when you can detach from ego, and that's when you truly practice what you preach, or you're practicing your faith. I wish I would have done something like that. Like, who knows? Everything could have shifted for me in religion. I just had such a bad taste in my mouth. And I tried. I remember being like 8 years old. I wanted to have faith. I love faith. I used to go, you know, I lived in St. Joe. There was a church right next to me. So I would go in there at night by myself, because I can literally feel energy. I can feel the faith of people in a space. When you have an experience, when you actually make a difference in the world, that's what religion and spirituality, I think, both are moving to achieve in this life.
Yeah, I've always had a problem with any sort of religion. Doesn't matter what kind, when they try to tell you that there's only one way to experience spirituality. Because I bet we can't find a human being that hasn't had a moment in their life that will forever stick with them. And chances are it's probably not in a directed place like a church, temple, synagogue, any of the above. For me, it's almost always been in some serious nature. Deep,
ooh, I love
deep,
that serious,
nature.
Deep nature.
Yeah, I mean, not just in the garden, although sometimes in the garden, but boy, on the many travels that we've been on have been some really spiritual moments. And to discount those because it didn't happen while I was praying a rosary or sitting in a church doesn't mean it didn't happen. And that's, I've always struggled with that. And like I mentioned earlier, I've learned so many things from learning about other faiths and religions and practices that I've borrowed. And that doesn't, I don't see how any sort of faith could discount that. Yeah, I don't want to be, we're all in this together type cliche, but I don't understand how we can be in this year of 2021 and not have more religious communication, cooperation, and general harmony between faiths that are often so similar in their foundations. That does frustrate me a lot.
Yeah, well, and I hope that it's the acupuncture points throughout the world that actually changes this, because religion starts wars.
One thing I wanted to say too, when you were kind of questioning, like, is it hard to deal with the language or the dogma or all these different things? And I think I like to think of religion or churches themselves as a family. And sometimes those families are dysfunctional. And there's sometimes you look forward to seeing all your family, and then you see them, and then they frustrate you sometimes by the things that they say or the arguments that occur. And so I like to think of the church as a whole as a family member, and there's things you like about it and there's things you don't. And you have to determine if that relationship is still positive enough for you to stay in it. And there might be days when it is not, and there might be days when it is, but you are still connected, and that line will always be drawn, but you may choose not to come to dinner or to communion or to service, but that doesn't mean you can ever fully just separate yourself from that if you were ever a part of it, because it's always a part of you.
Yeah, I love that. That's really beautiful, because what I heard as you were saying that is, if you show up to church and there's something that's not resonating with you, you kind of look within. You're not blaming without. And then you're making the intuitive decision, like, is this still a positive relationship for me? Because we choose everything. We choose every part of our day. And sometimes those choices are real hard.
And just like you walk into your parents' house and maybe you don't agree with everything that they think or say, but you love them. You can sit in a church and participate in a service and not fully hold up a sign for everything that church believes in. And so I've had to come to terms with that, just because there's a lot of things that I love about the Catholic Church, and there's some things that I don't love. And I remain a member of the Lutheran Church because of that. But we go back and forth. I think our dual religious family has had a lot of opportunities to see the commonalities they're both, you know, Christian religions, but I think that sets the scene for our children to think, oh, maybe religions all have a common theme that I can get behind, or at least some sort of broad theme that I can agree with in a general way.
And they also think, oh, I have a choice.
Yeah, because there's so many differences in our own personal beliefs with some of the practicing religions. I used to just say, we're really bad at our faith. I'm a bad Catholic. I'm a bad Lutheran. I'm bad at everything. But then I had a epiphany at one point where I thought, why am I saying I'm bad at it? It's just who I am. I'm not going to apologize. We all start off in the faiths that our parents put on us. And I'm definitely Catholic because my parents are Catholic. Who knows what I could have been had they been some other faith. But you know, it's now that I have so much sunk cost into being Catholic, I've spent so much of my life being Catholic, I can't just turn my back on it, and I can't just walk around feeling bad about being a bad Catholic. So I just have to kind of own it. And like, it is who I am, and I can't unlearn all the things I've learned from my travels and growing. And so it just has to become part of it. I can't kick it to the curb just because it makes me quite angry sometimes.
But I think that's what makes you a fantastic Catholic. And my thought was like, well, whose standards are you judging yourself by? We have been taught to judge ourselves throughout our entire lives. And that's a mindset we have to get out of. Because when you are like, I'm a wonderful Catholic, and how amazing that I'm still a part of this community, how, you know, I have decided to keep staying here, and I'm bringing all of these experiences in and raising this vibration of this community.
Lori, if the Catholic Church doesn't want us, they can tell us that we're out. And that's their prerogative.
And one of the nice things about spirituality is that it's supposed to, I mean, I think the more all-encompassing it is and the more people that feel welcome to be a part of it, I feel like that's the better, everyone's the better for it, you know. So hopefully that welcoming feeling can continue for people that are seeking that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you have a scripture that you're going to read today. So some might argue you are a phenomenal Catholic.
That is always a sign of someone that's good at religion. When they can when they can whip out a scripture. I am definitely not known for that. But I do have a favorite one, but only because I'm a biology teacher.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Do I just say it now?
Yeah.
It's such an incredible coincidence that you bring this up, because I would never be able to quote this scripture off the top of my head at any other point of the year, except that it is part of my school curriculum this week, because we're talking about genetics and how they have such a powerful influence on who we are. There's a scripture in Ecclesiastes 7:13, and that makes me feel really important that I know the numbers.
Feeding your ego.
But I do know the words, and I paraphrase them always, but I think the exact words are, consider God's handiwork, who can straighten what God hath made crooked? And I just love that scripture because it admits that we all have faults, and then it is God-given faults. And it can't be straightened. Or, and if it can, who should be doing that? Like, it's both about acceptance and trying to help people straighten the crookedness that we all inevitably have, but also accepting it. So I love the dual purpose of that scripture, both accepting faults and trying to help other people.
Well, and who's to say it's not better crooked?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and I know every scripture's got a million ways you can interpret it, and that one, I love the way it's open for interpretation, and it's why it works great with biology. When I'm teaching students the nature of life, there's lots of crookedness in life, and God's handiwork can't always be straightened, and sometimes it can, and then you have to ask, should we be straightening it?
Yeah.
Like, should it be messed with?
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that one to bring up my class, and we just talked about that this week, so, which is a benefit of the Catholic school. I can talk about that and not worry that I'm going to get canned.
Talk about what? Religion?
Yeah, I can pull out a...
I mean, you have to, right?
Well...
Isn't it part of the curriculum?
They definitely... There is definitely religion class, but as the biology teacher, like, I don't have to, but I can if I want.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the theme.
Yeah. It is.
Joanne, do you have any scriptures?
I do. I want to start by saying I think there's a scripture for almost anything you want if you really look. There's a lot of stuff in there. But this is one of my favorites. To always welcome the stranger and offer hospitality because you may be entertaining angels unawares. And I really like that one because I feel like every person you meet is an important person. And they might not be important to you, but they're important to someone else. And so you have to treat that person with respect and kindness and favor, just like you would your own family, because they're someone's family and everyone deserves that kind of respect. So.
Joanne, you are bringing the wisdom.
Zoom.
Listen, this is what I'm working on right now, especially with my own mindset, is that seeing every relationship, every encounter through my day as an opportunity, right? Like, you don't know where it could lead. You don't know who they are. So as you say, like, that person is an angel, we are all divine humans. And we were just talking about the wealth gap and how it's the biggest it's ever been right now. And through that, I feel like our humanity has become lost. And when we take ourselves out of that ego and out of the comparison game that we've been in for so long, and we actually remember we are all divine souls in these human bodies, and we all have the capacity to love, and maybe circumstances have shifted that, but there's always that common thread of love through humans.
And it's not easy to do. I mean, one thing that my mom said to us all the time when if we would come home with a story about a kid from school or somebody who was really hard to get along with or we didn't like them, she would always say, remember, the people that need the love most are the ones that are hardest to love. And that always used to drive me crazy because I was just like, raw, raw, raw. She doesn't even know. But usually she was right. Like, when I reflect on that now, mm-hmm. the people who were the worst to me had stuff going on, personal
yep.
stuff or family mm-hmm. stuff. Or things that I did not have going on. I had a very charmed life, you know, which I am thankful for and appreciative of. And maybe not at that time, but when I reflect on it now, totally appreciative of that. And so it's like the best thing to do, but it's sometimes the hardest thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, the wounding is real. Like, being human means you will have wounding at some point. And some people are experiencing heavy, intense lifetimes of wounding. And most of the time, anger comes from fear. And fear has been permeating in our culture for thousands of years. And we are now starting to unpack that. I feel like we're really starting to dismantle that as we're looking at our systems and our traditions and our adaptability and what happens in a pandemic and how do we get more local into our communities. You know, there are so many beautiful things that are evolving right now and bringing us back to our humanity. And my hope is that we definitely can get to a place where imagine this for a second, that every human's basic needs were met. Just imagine, we have so much wealth in this world. And if every human's basic needs were met, imagine what we could create together in that vibration. Even just feeling into that for me right now, it's like it gives me hope. We have to get out of this human time and what should happen quickly and immediately. And once we surrender to the divine plan or God's plan, which a lot of religions talk about, we actually can see more opportunities and possibilities in our life.
You taught me that recently, Lori, when you talked about the conjunction and the onset of the age of Aquarius, and then having learned about it recently from you. And then I wanted a quick answer about, well, how long is this age going to be? And then when you said a couple thousand years, it really transcends the minuscule fraction of our tiny, short time frame of a life. When you left after teaching me that, I struggled with that a little bit because I do want to experience everything I possibly can in my lifetime. And I'm a little bit bitter that I can't be here for the entire age of Aquarius after you taught me about it. But because realizing that it might not take full effect till after I'm long gone from this planet, and I was kind of mad about that. But then it also was kind of comforting to realize that, oh, yeah, since the onset of religions, regardless of what it is, 9,000 years of Buddhism, 2,000 years of Christianity, like they all have that factor of that life is beyond this little time frame that we have, 70 to 100 years that hopefully I live on this planet. But they all share that in common. And that is a little frustrating, but it's also comforting.
Yeah, well, I think it's comforting to know, especially, you know, as you have generations coming after you, to know like, ooh, at the height of the age of Aquarius, like people could be levitating. And I'm not joking about that. We have so much power within us. And when we keep shedding this programming of fear and lack and scarcity that we've been raised in, we haven't known anything else. This has been the dominant culture, and it comes in our media and sensationalism and even in religion. Like religion, that was the fear part of it. I just never jived with. Imagine in 160 years, what humans will be capable of doing. Like I believe it's going to be vastly different than what we are experiencing right now. And you will have descendants in those times. Like, that's rad.
I hope I have descendants in that time.
Yeah. Time will tell.
But it's always about hope. It's always about hope.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap up with the last question. If you had a podcast, who would your dream guest be and why?
So I kind of have like a thing against questions like that, because I feel like there are so many people that would be so awesome. It's kind of like, what's your favorite food? I don't have one favorite food. I honestly feel like the worst person to have would be someone who didn't want to say anything. But anyone else, anyone willing to share their story would be fun to talk to, because everybody has something. So I don't know if I would have a dream guest.
Okay, well, I'm totally opposite. And I'm very selfish with this. I know there's wonderful people on this planet that I should say, but I want to interview my family members, because when you put this microphone in someone's face in a podcast, you get them to say things that they normally wouldn't say in ways they wouldn't normally say it. And being a parent of children that don't want to talk to their parents, or being the son of a father who does not communicate, I would love to put them at the other end of a microphone and ask them all the things that they don't typically want to talk about. I think that would be great.
Those are two of my most original answers I've ever had. So thank you for that. I love getting taken out of my box. The way that I usually answer this question is I tailor it to the subject of the podcast episode that I'm doing. So when I was starting to think about this, I actually couldn't come up with anyone, and I was heartbroken. I was like, how is it possible that there is no one out there that I admire so much that's growing food and creating blue zones and doing exactly what you're doing? There's no one that is, I guess, enough in the spotlight that I've found them. And I was like, this needs to change. I feel like it's kind of like this silent subculture that we're not holding on the pedestal that it is. So then I went to the next person that is kind of my guru in genetic health and helping people that have been through experiences like me. Like, he's kind of a crusader, and his name is Dr. Ben Lynch. He does educational videos constantly about basically blue zone living and really creating a movement with people and talking about the reality of health and how that has to be our first priority. I'm so happy to be a part of sharing you with the world and basically giving credit where credit is very, very deserved.
I have one follow-up to that, because I feel like I would hate for you to go away thinking that this isn't a message that is shared, but it's shared in a way that might not be noticed by others. So I would say in our local community, we've had the opportunity to talk to groups and individuals and Kiwanis clubs and Rotary clubs and the Burt Presbyterian women, you know, and things like that. We have had the opportunity to connect and talk with those people about what we're doing in a very local and relevant way. And those are things that people outside of this community would never know happened. And that's okay, because our focus is really this community and the local things happening here. And so it's very meaningful, and I always enjoy those opportunities, and we talk about why we do it and how we do it and what we do, and those are cool opportunities for connection. But I've also had one really neat speaking opportunity that I wanted to bring up. There's a program through the USDA where you can get coupons just for senior citizens and just WIC participants to use, only for Iowa-grown produce at farmers market. So the people in charge of that food program were looking for farmers to come and talk about their experience with accepting those checks and like whether the program was working. And so I was invited to speak to this group of people from all over the United States, and it was held in Des Moines. And it was so much fun for me to share my stories as a farmers market grower of the clients that they're trying to serve. But you know, these are people in the corporate offices of the USDA. And for them to hear some of the stories I shared about specifically one woman who first came to the farmers market to use her WIC checks, and she was just pissed that she had to be there and use these. And her dad was clearly forcing her to come and spend this money on potatoes or whatever. He just wanted to make sure they didn't go to waste. Well, we cultivated that customer over a series of years. And I watched as her young child grew, and I convinced her to try some cherry tomatoes. And over the years, like, she didn't have to be on the WIC program anymore, and she would come and buy with cash. And then she brought her fiance to come and meet me one day, and every time she bought more things of cherry tomatoes. And you feel like, how do these relationships happen? They happen naturally and organically over time because people care to have those conversations. And when I told that story, one lady in the audience cried a little bit.
It's beautiful.
And it was meaningful to me, and it is meaningful to me. And I feel like that's like the core of the purpose of what we're doing here. We're helping people build their meals and build their lives and build their soul. And it was fun to be able to share that with people who are making decisions about food for others in a corporate sort of way. So we do get opportunities, but they're not ones that most people know about, but they're still really important and meaningful.
Absolutely. That's basically like we're cultivating life. If we wanted to use an analogy, like cultivating your life the way that you cultivate food and getting out of this immediacy timeline. And what I would like to see happen is, because you are creating like this pulsation, this crystalline light in your acupuncture point right here, and you've been doing it for years and it's grown and grown. I've come home to see and feel how it's grown. What we should aspire to, like all of us, is to connect those acupuncture points, because as they connect throughout the world, that's how we shift the consciousness and shift out of ego and shift into detached, unconditional love. And that's how we can stop being in conflict with each other. Beanie, what were you going to say? Last thoughts.
Well, I didn't know when we were going to end, but
You're like, I have a lot of last thoughts. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a lot of last thoughts. But if Joanne gets to tell a food story, I want to tell a food story since we've been talking about food. But Joanne by far has more connection to the community. My connection is through my teaching job. And today at school, we did a little food demonstration with my class. I have 20 subjects there at my beck and call. So I took in some some yogurt that my mother made out of goat milk just the other day.
Mm.
And so I did an experiment with them because I thought, okay, so this is yogurt made straight from the goats that were milked by hand just the other day. And I want to see if I can get the students to try it. And I know they would say no unless I set it up as an experiment. So I put blindfolds on them, and then I had store-bought yogurt and then this yogurt that my mom made. And they tried it, no problem. They rated it on how it tasted and different questions I asked. And the fun experiment part is that I told them to rate the apple flavor of it. And there was no apples in either of it. It was strawberry. It was strawberry and chocolate yogurt. But it was pretty fun pulling the rug out from underneath them and show them how powerful their brain is. Like after I told them it was apple yogurt, they were just convinced that they were trying apple yogurt. And of course, they take out the blindfolds and it's strawberry. And oh, it's fun we have at school. But when I told them that they were having goat yogurt, but when I told them that it was homemade with natural bacteria and there's no preservatives in it whatsoever. And then they could compare it to the store-bought yogurt and they could immediately tell like, oh yeah, this is completely, completely different stuff. It doesn't have all the carrageenan in it. And yeah, it's fun. So when you pointed out, Lori, we do a lot of food stuff around here, whether it's in my classroom or if Joanne's doing stuff at the Rotary.
Parents, did y'all get that gem? If you want your kids to do anything, just attach the word experiment.
Yeah, experiments for sure.
Or a taste test. We love a taste test.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because they didn't have a prejudgment about it. They tried it and had the experience with it. They could use their intuitive wisdom to be like, oh wait, this actually tastes better because I'm not being told that it's gross or weird or scary. So you got them into their sovereignty.
Yeah, it's hard to find your way into that sovereignty. Like to,
mm-hmm. It is.
I have to come up with all kinds of ways to trick my way in there. And sometimes I have to learn, like, how do I get the students to be interested in this or identify with it, because I'm getting old and it's a different ball game now.
Or be present with it.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of being somebody else's idea of it.
Right. I was just telling Joanne earlier how it takes me about 10 minutes per class usually to get the students to either buy in or not buy in. And before I know whether this is going to work or this isn't going to work. And you have to reinvent yourself constantly.
Oh my gosh. And so you're always just like gauging the vibration of the room.
Oh yeah. Always, always. And even so many times you walk into a classroom and you've got this great idea and these big plans, but that vibration of the room is not there and you know immediately this isn't going to work and you have to completely change gears or go about wasting an hour of your and their time.
Mm, look at you showing off with your adaptability and fluidity again.
Oh, no, don't mistake it for showing off. I'm admitting that I fail constantly.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up. Is there, I don't know, this is the thing that I'm curious about. I mean, Beanie's not on social media. Joanne, you and I are Facebook friends. Do you want people to get a hold of you?
Sure. We use Facebook a lot for, this is the time we want people to get a hold of us because we're building our CSA list for next year. We're planning for the garden season. So yes, like if people want to go out there and find us, we have a website at www.bodiemoonlightgardens.com, and then we're also Bodie Farm on Facebook. We named the Facebook page before we named the farm. It took us 10 years to name the farm. But yeah, this is a great time if you're a local person and want to reach out. Awesome. We would love to hear from you. If you just like to, a lot of people just like to follow because they enjoy seeing all the beautiful vegetable pictures in the summer, so feel free to do that too. And just, make your comments or whatever. We love to hear from people. We get people's questions and about recipes a lot or what to do with this or that. And we love to respond to those.
Well, and also you just never know where it may lead.
That's true. What's really fun is we like to share little things from the farm and people enjoy seeing the specialized equipment and stuff that we use on the farm because it's a very specific kind of growing. So you never know what you're going to see. One time, Beanie juggled a bunch of kohlrabi in a video on Facebook.
Joanne is very good at social media. And as you said, Lori, I am not. I just don't dislike. I want people to find our farm. I'm just really thankful that Joanne helps them find our farm.
Hey, teamwork makes the dream work.
Teamwork
makes the dream work.
Dream work.
So with that, we're going to wrap up. Yeah, until next time, cheers.
Cheers, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, Lori.
Hey-o.
And with that, let's normalize the struggles, celebrate the quirks, and lean into the light. From myself and Beezus the Brave, happy Wild Heart Revolution, friends.
Getting in the zone.
Auto zone. Please welcome.
Sorry.
Wait, fuck it up, Beanie.
Get in the zone. Auto zone. The thoughts in my head.
But first, this small interruption from Beanie.
Please. Okay, wait. There was some laughter
right,
in there.
Here we go.
Shut up.
All right. Okay. I have such a hard time shutting up. It's the hardest part.
We warned her that we were blabbers. I don't think she took this.